Sarah's Bookshelves Live. I'm Sarah of the blog Sarah's Bookshelves. Each week, I'm talking with one bookish guest about two old books they love, two new books they love, one book they don't love, and one new release they're excited about. We're going to get real and sometimes a bit snarky about all things books. If you like the show, I'd really love your support. Spread the word to your reader friends, subscribe to the show, rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts, or get bonus podcast episodes by supporting the podcast on Patreon. There's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Let's get rolling. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Spring 2020 book preview episode. Catherine from the blog Gilmore Guide to Books is joining me. Catherine is my regular co-host for these quarterly book preview episodes, and I saw a couple responses in the podcast survey I put out recently referring to Catherine as, quote, the Gilmore Guide lady and, quote, the woman from Seattle, which totally made us both laugh and kind of made our weeks. So I completely appreciated that. But also, I want to make sure y'all know that Gilmore Guide Lady and Woman from Seattle is Catherine Gilmore, and she can be found on Instagram at Gilmore Guide, and her blog is GilmoreGuideToBooks.com. And so y'all should definitely go follow her. Her written book reviews are beautiful, and those are on her blog, but also follow her on Instagram as well. Welcome back, Catherine.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for all those kind words.
Of course.
I'm happy to be known as the woman from Seattle, only I'm probably a little bit happier that I'm not there right now, given everything they're going through, because yes, I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And that was a recent move, right?
Yes, it was. It just happened in November. So, and it's a totally different world in a lot of ways. But anyway, I am happy to be back.
Well, we are glad to have you back. Something else that I heard in the survey results is that people really love these episodes and they love you and I together on them. So I was really excited to hear that. And these are also my very favorite episodes to record. So all of that makes me very happy. This is the first episode that I have recorded since the coronavirus really took hold and since people have begun social distancing and quarantining and staying home and schools have been closed and all that. But things have really changed out in the world and there's a lot of panic, as we all know, and I'm certainly not the person to commentate on this, so I'm not really going to. There are a lot better people out there to listen to. But I will say that I think books are going to be a real comfort to people during this time and certainly something to do since we all have to stay home. I wish I was reading more than I am at the moment. I've got younger kids at home, so I can't just sit around and read for 8 straight hours, but I am hoping that I will get to read more than usual since a lot of their activities have been canceled and I won't be spending that time driving them around town. And I also think it's really important to support authors during this time because those that have a new book coming out right now, their book tours have been canceled. And specifically, I'm thrilled that I recorded an episode with Sarah Pekkanen and Greer Hendricks, the authors of You Are Not Alone, a couple weeks ago. And that will be airing on April 15th because their book tour obviously did get canceled. And I'm thrilled that I'll be able to hopefully help a little bit in my very small way with that. I think from a book's perspective, one way you can support independent bookstores virtually is by getting your audiobooks from Libro FM. And I am an affiliate for Libro FM, but I also use them for as many audiobooks as I can. I mean, it's rare that I can't get an audiobook from Libro FM, if it's like an Audible original or something. But other than that, I've pretty much been able to find everything I want at Libro FM. And I do have a code for that. If you use the code Sarah's Bookshelves, you can get 3 audiobooks for the price of 1 at Libro FM.
Nice.
Yes. And I'll link to that in my Instagram bio, y'all. And y'all, they're not sponsoring this show, by the way. I just randomly said that. They're not paying for an ad or anything.
And I would say the same thing for your local, anyone who has a local independent bookstore. A lot of them are reacting very quickly and offering lower rates to ship books to you so that you don't come into the store and yet you can continue to support them and support the whole chain, the store, authors, everything.
And if you don't have a local bookstore that you support, I'll just plug The Bookshelf to Thomasville. I know you can order books online from them. And the owner, Annie Jones, is the host of From the Front Porch podcast, which I love. And I would recommend supporting them virtually if you don't have a local bookstore that you are attached to.
True. Another good one on the West Coast would be Powell's in Portland, which is massive. And they have an infrastructure in place to do online ordering and shipping. They've had it for decades. So there's another good one.
And bookshop.org. And I think that works similarly to Libro FM. All right, let's get to the books. Today, we are going to highlight the books we are most excited about that are coming out in April and May of this year. And as usual, we are going to start by sharing our success rates from our winter 2020 preview show. And I would say the news is not as great as it was for the fall preview, but I'm also not surprised. So my success rate for the winter preview was 55%. I ended up liking 5 out of my 9 choices. And I also have not had time to read one of them yet. So I am planning to read one more of those yet before it's all said and done. But my success rate in the fall was 78%. And I said at that time that there is nowhere to go but down. And I was correct. So 55 is not as great as 78, but it's not god awful. I'll take it, I guess.
Well, it's better than me. I know we're airing this on April Fool's Day, but my success rate is not an April Fool's joke. I tanked from 73% for fall down to 44%. 2020 has been really tough reading for me. I was so desperate to try and say something positive that I did go back and look at my 2019 winter success rate, so a year ago, and that was only 22%.
That was our first go-round at doing this, too.
That was our first go-round. And so if I want, I could say, wow, I actually doubled my success rate from 22 to 42. Where we are right now, I need positivity, so I'm going to say, woohoo. I'm only at 44%.
2020 so far for me has definitely not been like 2019 was from a reading perspective. Like right now, I only have 1 5-star book for 2020. And I think at this time last year, I had multiple 5-star books. I do have a fair number of 4.5-star books for 2020, though.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting. I have several 5-star, and I think the only interesting thing about them is they're all backlist.
Oh, yeah, that didn't bode well for 2020.
Right. And they're nonfiction, which is bizarre for me.
That is bizarre for you.
I think 2020 is going to have to be set aside as an anomaly of a year for a lot of reasons.
We've talked about this a little bit on another episode of the show. The election, I think, and I'm hearing this from people, and I've asked people that work in publishing their thoughts on this, and they say, yeah, probably, that publishers don't want to roll out their best stuff around a big election. And they're pushing books to the beginning of this year or pushing them back to 2021. So this fall, usually fall is the period where a lot of publishers throw out their biggest books that they're putting the most marketing dollars behind by their biggest name authors. And I think that's probably not going to happen this year like it has in the past.
I can see that.
Before we get to the books, let's quickly share our best and worst books from the winter episode. Catherine, tell me your best.
My best was Writers and Lovers by Lily King. I loved her last book, Euphoria. And this one, I really, really liked it. I had a couple issues. I think you and I agree on what those are. There are a couple circumstances in the main character's life that I just was like, really? You can't get this figured out? You're an adult.
And that circumstance would be the fact that she is drowning in student loan debt, but has spent the last few years gallivanting around the globe, not working and not paying her loan payments. I had an issue with that too. I'm like, okay, how are we supposed to feel sorry for you?
Right. It seemed quite self-inflicted. And I felt like it detracted from her story. It showed up It was annoying to me, but then it kind of went away. And the rest of her story and her path just ended up working really well for me. I thought it was kind of lovely. Well, what was your best?
My best was We Wish You Luck by Caroline Zancan. And she was a guest on the podcast recently. And it's my only 5-star book of 2020.
Oh, okay.
And I realize that it doesn't work for everybody, but it did work for me.
I also really loved it.
Good. Yeah. I mean, I know I've heard from many listeners on Instagram that it did not work for them. Like, if you don't like character-driven novels, this is not going to work for you.
Right, right. If you were waiting for some big twist or climax, it really was like, wait, huh? But I loved the college setting and that whole writing program. I thought that was all fascinating. I really enjoyed it.
And I thought her characters were fascinating. Her writing is just stratospherically good.
Yes.
And I had a close tie for second, and I want to share them too, because they're like not that far behind We Wish You Luck. So my tie for second place is Long Bright River by Liz Moore, also a podcast guest. I think that one was a much less divisive book. Many people loved that one.
Yes.
And then My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell.
Oh, boy.
I know. I thought it was really good.
I agree, but I'm trying to write a review and I'm just like, there's so much to discuss.
So much to discuss.
It's a great book club book because the discussion is going to go 180 degrees, I think, in how people perceive that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And y'all, my review of My Dark Vanessa is up under my March Books to Read and Skip blog post. And that's linked in my Instagram bio if you want to read my full review of that book. But I thought it was horrifying, yet riveting. And I thought she did a great job making you understand how a teenager could think that a relationship with her teacher was consensual, but understand that it's actually not consensual. And I think she did a great job painting that picture.
I agree. Absolutely.
All right. What was your worst?
Oh, Lordy. It was the one I was most excited about for winter. The Lost Diary of M by Paul Wolfe, the one that was about the woman who was a mistress of John F. Kennedy. And I don't want to go completely ballistic or negative on an author, but I DNF'd this one within, I think, the first chapter. The writing, I could not accept it. So that was really, really disappointing. I think you DNF'd it too, didn't you?
Yeah, I definitely DNF'd it. I don't even know that I made it far enough to even count it as an official DNF. I might have counted it as a sample. I sampled the writing and I agree. I thought the writing was absurd. It was just in this weird way that nobody would ever speak that way.
Exactly.
And it was supposed to be a diary. I'm imagining a woman writing her diary in the language that he used in the book. I'm like, this never, not even back then.
I agree. What was your worst?
So my worst was The Familiar Dark by Amy Engel. I was looking forward to this one because I loved her book, The Roanoke Girls. But this one was just forgettable, I think is the best word. I don't know why I finished it. I broke my own DNF rules in every way with this book.
Wow, that's momentous.
Moving on, let's get to the books that we're excited to talk about.
Yes.
Here's how we'll do this. Catherine and I each picked 6 books coming out in April and May. So you will get a total of 12 of our regular picks, but you will also get a bonus 13th pick today because there is a book that we added at the very last minute that was supposed to come out in June. And then we just found out right before we recorded the publication date had been moved to May. So it's a book we're both excited about. It. We are going to share it as a cosign recommendation. So you're going to get a baker's dozen today. We are also not holding ourselves to a specific number of books per month. And for me, I didn't have as much in April that I was excited about. So my books are May heavy. And unless otherwise noted, we have not read these books yet. I have read 1.75, I'll say, of these books, and I will let you know which those are. My first book is called Perfect Tunes by Emily Gould, and that is coming out April 14th from Avid Reader Press. It's literary fiction. And Avid Reader Press, y'all, is the imprint of Simon & Schuster that published The Only Plane in the Sky. So this is actually their first novel they've published. They've been publishing nonfiction. It is about a girl named Laura who moves to New York City's Lower East Side to pursue her music dreams. When she gets there, her life is kind of turned upside down by a love affair with a stereotypical flaky musician. By that, I mean he's super talented and super compelling, but also has a drug problem and is really erratic with his behavior and you can't rely on him, all that kind of stuff. So I also heard about this novel from Becca Freeman, who co-hosts the Bad on Paper podcast, and she was a guest on the show a while back, and Christina Ariola, who used to work for Bustle. They both loved it. And it's also been blurbed by Stephanie Danler, who wrote the novel Sweet Bitter, and you'll hear more about Stephanie Danler later in this episode, and Emma Straub, who I'm sure many of you have heard of. So I've already read this one. I rated it 4.25 stars. I really loved it. I was really surprised by it. It was not at all what I was expecting in a good way. My plot summary was really vague. The synopsis, I think, is shockingly detailed. I would recommend, if this book sounds like something you might be interested in, do not read the publisher synopsis.
Okay, well, that's good to know because it sounds interesting to me.
When I talk about this, I'm going to talk generally about the themes that the book focuses on so as to not further exacerbate this plot situation. The overwhelming theme for me was women struggling to pursue their dreams while being mothers and wives. And if you like that theme, or if that you think that would resonate with you, I think this book would really appeal to you. I think you also need to like character-driven novels. I want to be careful from now on about making sure I label character-driven novels appropriately, because I sometimes feel like I talk about a book I love and then people come back and they're like, well, nothing was happening. And I want to make sure that I'm appropriately setting expectations for that kind of stuff. So this is character-driven. The story begins with this toxic relationship that I mentioned earlier. And it really reminded me of the relationship in Sweet Bitter between, I think it was Jake, the bartender, and Tessa. From there, it turns into an exploration of motherhood and balancing time and attention to children with trying to pursue a personal passion or a personal dream. I thought it captured motherhood very, very well. I thought it also packed a lot into a small package. This book is less than 300 pages long, and it covers a pretty long time span. So the way that Emily Gould does this is she checks in with Laura's life for a segment of the book. And these are pretty long segments. It's not like little vignettes. And then she'll skip forward some number of years. And then you check in with Laura again for a pretty long segment. In that way, I felt like the characters were still very, very fleshed out. And the story was really fleshed out, even though she covered a number of years in under 300 pages. Another side storyline of this is the difficulty and the struggle of trying to maintain a friendship with somebody that your life goes in two really different paths. The other thing I'll say about this book, and this is going to irritate a lot of listeners, including you, Catherine, this is the book that I wanted Writers and Lovers to be.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So it's still about struggling to pursue your dream and the obstacles that you encounter to that, and then how you balance all that together. But for me, the motherhood balancing take on it was so much more relatable. I related far more to Laura than I did to Casey. And that's probably the stage of life that I'm in. So maybe it's a stage of life thing. One other tip about this book, I was listening to an audiobook called Why Women Can't Sleep by Ada Calhoun while I was reading Perfect Tunes in print, and it addresses many of the same themes from a nonfiction perspective. And y'all, I'm talking about Why Women Can't Sleep in more detail on my March book recommendations episode for patrons. So if you want to hear more about it, you can subscribe to support the podcast on Patreon, which I'm so, so thankful for everybody that does that. You really are the engine that makes this show go, and you make it much easier for me to put the show on and keep it on the air and keep it running. So thank you for that. Anyway, I think it would be a great pairing with Perfect Tunes. And I also think Perfect Tunes would be an awesome book club pick, specifically for women. That was Perfect Tunes by Emily Gould, coming out on April 14th. Catherine, tell me about your first book.
This first novel is a debut. It's called Godshot by Chelsea Biker. It comes out April 7th from Catapult. And it is about a teenager named Lacey who lives on a farm with her mother in the fruit basket, or you know that there's that stretch of land that is just an agricultural paradise. It's where most of the produce we get in America comes from. Anyway, without designating a timeline, I'm thinking it's the future because drought has settled in, their crops have been decimated. Everyone is struggling. Their small town is dying. And I'm using this word in quotes, preacher has come along promising salvation and rain.
Is this a cult book?
I think it kind of is, Sarah, but it's got a lot of elements. Her mother, who is an alcoholic and unmarried, takes a lover, and because of her sins, is evicted from the community. So Lacey's left behind with her grandmother, who is a little bit eccentric. Not surprisingly, things become increasingly dystopian with what this preacher requires for salvation. So Lacey decides to leave and try and find her mother. I chose this book, gosh, probably at the end of 2019, because it had so many elements that appealed to me. Debut, female author, female narrative, climate change, the problems with patriarchal religion / cults. But given everything that's going on right now, I'm a little concerned this may be more dark than I need. I don't know, but I'm really intrigued.
I see your point about dystopian could get kind of scary right now.
Right?
A little bit. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about, I wouldn't want to really read Station 11 right now.
Oh my gosh. I keep thinking about it, but I agree with you. I wouldn't do it.
But I've been hearing about this book. I've seen it around a fair amount. So I'm sort of interested in it too. But I always like, dystopian is not my wheelhouse. So I like other people to vet them for me before I take a chance on it.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to do that for you with Godshot.
We have a really good symbiotic relationship like that.
Yeah, we do.
A lot of vetting for each other. So that was Godshot by Chelsea Biker, coming out April 7th. My next book is called The Knockout Queen. It's by Rufy Thorpe, and it's coming out April 28th. And I'm really wanting to be finished with it before we recorded. I couldn't make it happen, but I'm 85% through, so I'm really confident in what I'm saying other than the last 15%. Rufy Thorpe wrote Dear Fang with Love, which I adored. That's the only book of hers I have read. She also wrote The Girls of Corona Del Mar, which I think you and Susie both loved, right?
Loved it. You do need to read it. I know you'll never get to backlist.
No, I will. I will. It's on my list.
It's really good.
I'm much more likely to get to the backlist books of authors whose newer books I've loved.
I agree. Yeah.
So this is high on the list for sure. And it's literary fiction. So unlike Perfect Tunes, I think this publisher's blurb about this book is appropriate in its level of detail. The story is about a teenage friendship between Bunny. She's a 6'3" girl.
Wow.
I'm not that tall. I'm 5'8", but I grew really early. So I was 5'8" in seventh grade with boobs.
Wow. Yeah, I was 5'9 in eighth grade.
Yeah. So we know how that feels to be the awkwardly tall girl, right? And it sounds silly that it's that big of a deal, but I'm telling you, it is a big deal.
It is.
The boys come up to your shoulder and you just seem so ungangly around everybody else.
It's awkward.
So Bunny is 6'3". She's also an awesome volleyball player. And y'all know how I love a good female athlete protagonist and how rare they are in fiction. So I'm thankful for that. So Bunny's mother died and her father is a pretty wealthy alcoholic, but also has some underlying issues going on. So Bunny lives with her father. Her next door neighbor is Michael, who is gay. And he is living with his aunt because his mother had to go to prison. And it's set on the North Shore of California. And there is sort of a an incident that happens in the book that really propels the story. So Tyler Goodson rated it 5 stars. And I, at 85%, unless something drastic happens that changes my opinion, this will be my second 5-star book of 2020.
Really? Oh, boy.
It's so good. It's being marketed as a dark coming-of-age story, and I would agree. I think that's accurate. And I have not read The Girls from Corona Del Mar yet, but the publisher is saying that this book is kind of going back more to the style of The Girls from Corona Del Mar than from Dear Fang with Love.
Okay.
And really, these two teenagers are both outsiders in their own way, in very different ways, but they're best friends. It's about just like teenage awkwardness and trying to figure out who you are and sort of losing your innocence, both literally, and I mean kind of like sexually, and figuratively in the sense of how the world works and how much you can trust adults. The whole teen awkwardness part of it and the teenage best friends in the neighborhood kind of vibe reminded me a little bit of My Sunshine Away, which was a debut novel that came out a couple years ago by M.O. Walsh.
Yeah, I hadn't heard of it, but this is reminding me of Eleanor and Park.
Oh, I haven't read that.
Okay. It's YA. It's very much about not fitting in and being awkward and uncomfortable as a teenager. Very similar.
Yeah. I will say this is a character-driven novel. Again, y'all, I would say it's less character-driven than Perfect Tunes and less character-driven than We Wish You Luck. And the overwhelming reason I love this book so much is Ruphie Thorpe's voice and her writing. And the story is told from the perspective of Michael, who is the male. And I think that the characters are people that I think most people will really like and feel for, if not exactly relate to. You'll relate, like I relate to some things about some of them and then not others, but I feel for them in all respects. They are definitely flawed, but I think they're characters that people will really kind of grab onto. That is The Knockout Queen by Ruphie Thorpe, coming out April 28th. All right, Catherine, tell me about your next book.
Well, after just saying that my first book is kind of dystopian and dark, and I'm wondering if it's the way to go, my second book is called Masterclass by Christina Dulcher, and it's pretty dystopian. So I'm kind of working against my best interests if I'm worried about my mental health and reading dystopian.
Maybe it depends on the kind of dystopian it is.
I think so. But I really loved Dulcher's debut, Vox.
Yes. I didn't read it, but I remember seeing it around.
Okay. Well, it was very dystopian from a feminist slant. It kind of felt pretty real. But Masterclass is about Elena, who is a teacher at an elite state school. The educational system in the country has been completely overhauled and is run now based on IQ tests, which give children points. And children are sent to different levels of schools based on the results. Elena's daughter doesn't test well, so she's sent away to a federally run boarding school. And Elena requests a transfer to the school to be with her daughter and discovers they're not being taught anything other than how to make handcrafted goods, which are highly valued now because everything in the world is machine made. It feels to me as if Dulcher has found a lane and she's going to stick with it, which is namely looking at what scares her in modern day America. But she looks at that and then takes it to the next level. So my sense is she's really going to get into what happens when we start changing the rules of education.
This sounds like the kind of dystopian that might be okay right now. It's not disease related.
Exactly.
This sounds interesting to me too.
Yeah. I don't feel as if she's one note or heavy handed. I think there's a lot of thought that goes into how she's going to present this. I think there will be layers. So that's Masterclass by Christina Dulcher, and it comes out on April 21st.
I'm going to let you vet that for me too.
Okay. Wow. I'm going to be busy this spring.
My next book is a pretty buzzy one. It is All Adults Here by Emma Straub, coming out May 5th from Riverhead. And I love Riverhead. That is a publisher that tends to do really well for me.
I agree. That would be interesting to look at our choices based on publisher and the success rate there.
I do that through my tracker at the end of the year.
I need to do that because I use your tracker and I've just never compiled those stats specifically, but Riverhead is great.
Interestingly, Riverhead is never in my top publishers on my tracker because it's smaller. My top publisher is like a Random House because I read more books by Random House because it's bigger. But my percentage success rate with Riverhead, I bet, is high, even though I don't read the sheer number of books from Riverhead that I would from a Random House.
That's kind of what I think about them as a publisher. They're quality over quantity.
Yeah. Anyway, this is contemporary fiction, and the synopsis for this book is a little bit vague, which I appreciate. So thank you, Riverhead. Astrid, who's the main character, she's an older woman. She has grandchildren. She witnesses a school bus crash, and it reveals a memory about a long ago parenting mistake, which then causes her to reflect on her decisions, her grown children and their lives, and her grandchildren. So Annie Jones rated this 5 stars. So did Tyler Goodson. And it has been blurbed by Elizabeth Gilbert, Elizabeth Strout, and Ann Patchett, all authors I really love.
Good grief.
I know, right?
How are you going to go wrong?
I did not like Emma Straub's The Vacationers.
Okay. I liked it. I wouldn't say I loved it.
This is a multi-generational family drama. And from what I'm hearing, it is not one that you would say is an extremely dysfunctional family drama. It is the kind of dysfunction that families everywhere have. So regular family that you can totally identify with might be able to see it as your family. Also some dysfunction there, but isn't there dysfunction in every family?
Normal dysfunction.
Normal dysfunction. Yeah. So the publisher is comparing it to Commonwealth by Ann Patchett and Little Fires Everywhere. I don't know if those are accurate or not. I'll have to read it and find out. But the premise itself reminded me more of The Most Fun We Ever Had because of the focus on the lives of the adult children.
Oh, that's a big recommendation. I loved that book.
I liked it. I thought it could have been shorter. But look, All Adults Here is shorter. 370 pages. So it's apparently light, but with substance, which is what I love, especially for summer. And the publisher thinks it will appeal both to readers of literary fiction and to commercial fiction. Again, character driven. Y'all, I hope I don't have all character driven novels on this list today. Anyway, sorry. I just picked the books I was most excited about. Character driven. A lot about the individual characters' identities, as well as the family as a whole. And it's set in a small town on the Hudson Valley of New York, so kind of a small town life vibe as well. And Goodreads reviewers said that it's witty and that some of the characters are pretty dislikable at first, but they become more endearing as the book goes on. But these are all kind of flawed people, which I think is how most people are.
Well, that's the best kind of reading.
Yeah, I agree. That's All Adults Here by Emma Straub, coming out May 5th. All right, tell me about your next book.
My next pick is probably the one I'm least certain about, but the synopsis just sounded intriguing to me. It's called If I Had Your Face by Frances Cha. It's coming out April 21st from Ballantine, and it's set in modern-day South Korea. And is about 4 young women who all live in the same apartment building in Seoul. And the main theme seems to be the role of beauty as the biggest measure of a woman's worth. And I don't know how much attention or time you have to pay to this sort of thing, but if you ever go into Sephora or you ever do look at beauty products, South Korea is like the epicenter for being on the cutting edge of beauty and especially skincare.
I did know that. I don't spend any time in Sephora. I don't know that I've ever set foot in there because I really don't wear a lot of makeup and I don't really know how to do makeup. But I do know that South Korea is ahead of the game on skincare. And I think I know it because of an episode of Shark Tank.
Okay. Well, and that's, I'm the same way as you are. I am not a makeup fan, but at my age, skincare is, that's a focus and I care. And so I know that the things that come out of South Korea are always really, really special and often really effective. Anyway, two of the women in the apartment building live together, Miho and Kayuri. They're both involved with wealthy and powerful men, and both of their relationships depend largely on their looks and their appearance. Another woman, Ara, is a hairstylist who's obsessed with boy bands and has a best friend who is saving up all her money to undergo extreme plastic surgery. So it seems to me this is going to be kind of character driven, as you're saying, but I'm very intrigued the fact that it's set in South Korea. The author is from Seoul. I'm feeling as if it could be an insider's look at the darker side of South Korean society and the emphasis they place on women's looks.
Now, this sounds fascinating to me, too. I love a good dark underbelly story.
Right. And the struggle just to maintain and to be judged solely by your appearance. On the one hand, we hear the positives of it. They take care of their skin. We get to benefit from that. But when it's an obsession, so that is If I Had Your Face by Frances Cha, and it comes out April 21st.
My next book is nonfiction. It is Stray by Stephanie Dandler, coming out May 5th, and it is her memoir. She, as I mentioned earlier, is the author of the debut novel Sweet Bitter. So this is her second book, first memoir. After she published Sweet Bitter, she returned to California, which is where I guess she grew up, from New York, and she faces her traumatic childhood and her family situation involving alcohol and drug addiction. So Danny Shapiro, the author of the memoir Inheritance, blurbed this. And if y'all don't remember Sweet Bitter, it was the book about the New York City restaurant scene. I mentioned it earlier, a very toxic relationship was sort of at the center of it. But Stephanie Dandler's writing was gorgeous.
Absolutely.
And it had this pink cover with a broken wine glass that made you think it was going to be chick lit. And then you read it and it's a lot darker than you thought it was going to be. And the writing was just a lot more gorgeous than you expected. And I rated it 5 stars. So I loved it. And it's now a TV series on Stars, everybody. So I found this interview with her when I was prepping for this episode. And she talks about how the blow up of Sweet Bitter, and by blow up, I mean it was just super successful, the TV deal, all that. And the attention that it brought to her really shook her. And she was trying hard to get herself back into the headspace she needed to be in to be able to write again. And she didn't feel like she could do that in the immediate aftermath of Sweet Bitter. She literally felt like she couldn't write.
Wow. Okay.
That was one of the reasons she moved to LA. She feels like in LA, she can hole up a little bit and hide a little bit more. Also in that interview, and I'll link to this in the show notes, y'all, but she said she would never write about the New York restaurant scene again. She did not want that to become what she's known for and the only thing she's known for.
Oh, interesting.
She was really interesting in this interview. I feel like most authors talk about just they spew lines that sound pretty rehearsed about how grateful they are for their success. And they just are so thankful for all the readers who are reading their books and da-da. And I appreciate that. And I get that. But I also appreciate Stephanie Dandler kind of showing you the shock and adjustment she had to go through.
Oh, I agree.
All of a sudden becoming a famous person. And writers have been able to kind of hide away and focus on their work and focus on their creativity. And she like couldn't hide anymore.
Right.
And like what that does to your ability to create again. I thought that was super interesting. I actually would love to have her on the podcast. I got to read this memoir first, though.
Oh, that would be great.
I mean, she might be way too famous to come on this podcast now. Please, Stephanie Dandler, if you're listening, which I'm sure you're not. Back to the book. So apparently this memoir is very raw and very candid. And I loved this quote from a Goodreads reviewer named Kim. She says, she is careful with her subjects and careless with herself.
Ooh.
That also, to me, described Jessica Simpson's memoir, which I loved.
I need to read that. Everyone is loving that.
It's so unexpectedly good.
Okay.
Anyway, some other reviewers said she does come across as a little bit dislikable and privileged. So we'll see. What all the reviewers said is that her writing is gorgeous, which does not surprise me. I would expect that. And she tells her story in three parts. The first part is mother, the second part is father, and the third part is monster. And the monster refers to an affair she had with a married man. So if that's something you can't read about, take note. And I think, you know, both her mother and her father have had a lot of issues, and she gets deep into the family stuff. So raw, unflinching. I am really excited to read this book.
Oh, I am too. This sounds really, really good.
This also is giving me a little bit Wild Game vibes. We'll have to see if that actually is the case when I read it.
Right.
This is Stray by Stephanie Dandler, coming out May 5th, and it is a memoir. Tell me about your next book.
Well, my next book is first of my books in May, and it's Big Summer by Jennifer Weiner, and it comes out May 19th from Atria. And I hadn't read Weiner in ages, probably not since, gosh, what's that one that made a movie, Cameron Diaz, In Her Shoes, which loved the movie. But I loved her last book, Mrs. Everything, for its take on family, identity, and women's roles, both within the family and in society. But Big Summer moves from relationships between sisters to long-term relationships between women. And Daphne and Drew were best friends in high school, ride or die, but have lost touch after they had a massive falling out. 6 years later, when the novel begins, Drew is back and she needs a favor. She wants Daphne to be her maid of honor at her over-the-top society wedding on Cape Cod. Daphne has grown up now. Her role in their friendship in high school was as Drew's sidekick. Well, Daphne now has her own life on Instagram as a plus-size influencer. So the power dynamic has completely shifted.
Ooh, interesting.
I know. I'm feeling like you don't have to stretch your imagination too far to know this has got real potential as messy, fun reading.
I also love society wedding books. Seating arrangements, anyone?
Oh, yes. So I feel like I'm interested initially. What pulled me in was all the plot. But what really has me wanting to read this is that I feel as if Weiner always goes a bit deeper. I would call her brain candy reading because it's light and yummy, but not empty calories.
And that's the brain candy that we like.
Exactly. There are always layers to her stories, and I appreciate that.
The lightness is in the style, not the topics and the substance.
Exactly. So that's Big Summer by Jennifer Weiner, and it comes out May 19th.
I'm looking forward to this too, despite the fact that I DNF'd Mrs. Everything pretty early on. And by the time this episode airs, you will have heard me tell you in detail about my experience with Mrs. Everything. One of my guests shares it on a mini episode.
Oh, okay. Great.
However, I loved Jennifer Weiner's memoir, Hungry Heart.
Oh, I didn't read that.
It's really good. I loved her writing style. I thought she was hilarious. I thought she tackled really meaningful issues with relatability and humor. And so I'm looking forward to this for summer as well.
Okay.
All right. My next book, this is my risk book. It's not coming from a trusted recommendation source. It just sounds interesting. It's also out of my wheelhouse in multiple ways. It is called Running by Natalia Sylvester, and it's coming out May 5th, and it's YA, which I don't normally read a lot of.
Oh, okay. This is a trifecta of newness for you.
Yes. This is not Natalia Sylvester's debut, but it is her debut YA. And she wrote a novel years ago called Chasing the Sun. I read it. I was a little bit on the fence about it. But the premise of this one sounds really interesting to me and also really timely. And Natalia Sylvester is a Latina woman as well. So this will play a part in the book. It is about a 15-year-old Cuban-American. Her name is Mariana Ruiz. And her father decides to run for president. And Mariana struggles with living in the spotlight and discovers she doesn't necessarily agree with her father's political positions. I don't love books about politics, but I do like politically adjacent books. And what that means to me is stories about the people that sort of live around politics, but not about the policy itself, I guess. So the publisher's comparing this to I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter by Erica Sanchez, which I really did love. That was a couple years ago. And that was YA too. So I like the fact that this is about a young girl figuring out what she believes in and finding her voice. And I also love books that go into what it's really like to live in the spotlight and what goes on behind the scenes of the spotlight. Like an example of a book like that is The Book of Essie for me.
Oh, gosh. What a great book.
I know, right? And that's what's really appealing to me about this one. Because this is a risk for me, I wanted to make sure and sample the writing. And I read the prologue and a bit of the first chapter, and I really did love the writing. And it doesn't feel overly YA. At least from that small part that I did read. And the reason this is risky for me is, number one, because it's YA, but also the whole fact that it's set in the political world. I hope it doesn't become heavy-handed. We'll just have to see. But those are my risk factors. That is Running by Natalia Sylvester. Tell me about your next book.
Well, my next book has Red Dress in Black and White. It's by Elliot Ackerman. And it comes out May 26th. Ackerman's last novel, Waiting for Eden, was emotionally brutal in its intensity and really creatively executed. So I'm very curious to see what he does here.
Y'all, Waiting for Eden was my number one book of 2018, by the way.
Yeah, it wasn't my number one, but it was in my top 10. Red Dress sounds as if it's going to be as emotionally charged as Waiting for Eden, but in a completely different way. Catherine lives in Istanbul with her Turkish husband and their young son. She has an affair and decides to leave her husband and take her son and her lover back to America, except her husband isn't going to let that happen. Given the current climate in Turkey, this sounds like it's going to be a thriller with a lot of layers, political corruption, and intrigue layered on top of the already highly charged subject of divorce and custody. But Ackerman goes a step further. The novel is condensed into a 24-hour timeline.
Ooh, interesting.
So I am really excited to see what he does with this. And it's Red Dress in Black and White and comes out May 26th.
I'm super excited about this too, y'all. Catherine and I fought over who got to share this one. We fought over a couple books this quarter, y'all.
It doesn't happen often, but sometimes it does.
Yeah, no, it really doesn't happen as much as one would think. All right, I've got my last book for y'all, and it is another memoir. It is called Eat a Peach by David Chang. And if you have not heard of David Chang, he is a famous restaurateur, and this is coming out May 19th. He owns the restaurant empire in New York called Mama Fuco. It's not just in New York anymore, but it started in New York. He shares his story, which sounds like there's a lot to it. He's battled bipolar disorder. He grew up in a very religious Korean-American family in Virginia. And I love stories about the children of immigrants growing up in America and sort of the push-pull battles of the traditional parents versus the children who are trying to live more Americanized lives and how culturally that doesn't really jive super well. And then he talks about how he built his empire from a small ramen bar on the Lower East Side of New York to what it is now, which includes a Netflix TV show called Ugly Delicious.
He's an interesting guy.
Super interesting.
He reminds me of Tony Bourdain. He can talk to everyone. His love for food is so evident in everything he does that it's really engaging.
I'm planning to listen to this on audio, and it will be narrated by David Chang. The other thing about David Chang, I listened to a podcast episode with him and Bill Simmons. David Chang does not hold back.
No.
And he's a little bit crass. So if that bothers you, just know that. Doesn't bother me. And there are really no reviews out there for this yet. So I don't have much else to say about it because I really couldn't find any reviews yet. So we'll have to see how it goes. All right. Tell me about your last book.
It's historical fiction, which of course I always love. It's called The First Actress by C.W. Gortner. Comes out May 26th. He is one of these novelists who stays in a particular genre, which is historical novels about famous women. One of his last was Mademoiselle Chanel, which I really loved, and The Romanov Empress. So he's a go-to author for me. This book is about Sarah Bernhardt, who was not only an incredible stage actress in the late 1800s, but a fascinating woman. Her mother was a courtesan, and Sarah was expected to follow in her footsteps and kind of decided, no, I don't want to do that. So she turned to acting, which socially was not considered much better than being a courtesan. But the novel's told in the first person and follows not just her professional life, but the years she spent in Paris during the Franco-Prussian War, which was the 1870s. I'm going into this kind of blind. I don't know much about Sarah Bernhardt, but I do know that she was what we would consider a celebrity. And more importantly, she lived life on her own terms. And that's The First Actress by C.W. Gortner.
But y'all, we got a bonus recommendation. And Catherine and I are co-signing this, so I'll set it up and Catherine can add her thoughts about it. It is Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld, which was supposed to come out in late June and is now coming out May 19th. So we've already talked about this book a little bit. Caroline Zancan shared it on episode 47 as the upcoming release she was excited about. It's contemporary fiction, and Curtis Sittenfeld did the same thing that she's going to do with this novel. She did it with Laura Bush in An American Wife way back when, which I loved. And that is, she's basically fictionalizing a first lady's private life and thoughts and feelings. So in this case, she tells an alternate history of what if Hillary Clinton had never married Bill. Super interesting premise. Jordan from Jordy's Book Club has read it and rated it 4 stars on Goodreads. I have not seen him talk about it on Instagram yet. Let's see. I love Curtis Sittenfeld. I love her writing. It's super readable, but she explores deeper questions and issues. And I loved her short story collection, You Think It, I'll Say It. This story supposedly explores being a woman in an arena that's dominated by men, obviously politics, loneliness, sacrifice. And there's not really many reviews out there on Goodreads. There don't seem to be many galleys out there either.
Is that ticking any boxes or ringing any bells for you?
Book club, Oprah. It's really interesting that Hillary Clinton's actual photograph is part of the book cover and that her name is the book title. So in An American Wife, it's obviously a fictionalized version of Laura Bush, but the character's name is different. They've changed all the identifying small details, even though you know who it is, right? They haven't changed any of that for this book. How?
Could they still be negotiating things?
I mean, has Hillary like signed off on it? I feel like they would have had to have gotten her permission, don't you think?
I do. I just don't know what the laws are.
I don't either. If any of you out there work in publishing or have insider knowledge about how in the world Curtis Sittenfeld is able to use Hillary Clinton's actual photograph and name in this fictionalized version of her life, please DM me. I'm so curious.
Absolutely. We need to know.
All right. What's your number one book of the season, Catherine?
I'm going with Light and Jennifer Weiner and Big Summer. Because I figure no matter what happens with this virus by May, I am going to need a break.
Fair enough. Mine is The Knockout Queen because I can confidently tell you I loved it. I'll also say Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld because I love Curtis Sittenfeld so much. I love whatever she does. All right. As always, we will have links to all these books in the show notes and timestamps so you can go right to the part of the episode where we talk about each book. next week, there will not be an episode at all because it is my kid's spring break. And, well, we're supposed to be on a spring break trip. I kind of doubt we're going to be on that trip, but I'm going to take it as vacation. Whether I'm in my own house or somewhere else, I don't know. So anyway, I'm going to move forward with the plan to not air a new episode that week. The following week, though, and that would be April 15th, I'll be back with a full-length episode featuring the co-writing duo of Sarah Pekkanen and Greer Hendricks, the authors of most recently You Are Not Alone, but also An Anonymous Girl and The Wife Between Us. Talk to you next week. Thanks so much for listening to Sarah's Bookshelves Live. You can find show notes with all the books mentioned in the episode, purchase links, and linked timestamps at www.sarahsbookshelves.com/podcast. And that's Sarah with an H. I'd love to hear your comments, feedback, and suggestions. You can find me online on my blog, sarahsbookshelves.com, on Twitter at sarahsshelves, on Instagram at sarahsbookshelves, and via email at sarahsbookshelves@gmail.com. And if you'd like to get exclusive bonus episodes of the podcast, you can support us on Patreon at www.patreon.com/sarahsbookshelves. And there's a link in the show notes and in my Instagram bio to my Patreon page. Thanks for listening.